Hari Hiko Sa Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 11. Well, doesn't same number.
These are the same.
Outline of the Satsandarbhas. Although the present course focuses only on the first installment, Sri Tattva Sandarbha, it is nonetheless worth mentioning the contents of the remaining Sandarbhas. 1. Tattva Sandarbha, establishing Bhagavat epistemology and ontology. Right? So the definitions and positions of everything is established, because then it's very clear how you can work with it, what you can do something with it. 2. Bhagavat Sandarbha, establishing that the Bhagavan feature of the Absolute is the highest. Because, 3. Paramatma Sandarbha, explaining Atma and Paramatma. Krishna Sandarbha, establishing that Lord Krishna is the supreme aspect of the Bhagavan feature. Right, so all this is Sambandha Tattva. Then, because he said that he's doing it all in Sambandhavideya and Prayojana. That's what Krishna's Kaviraj mentioned, yes.
It seems like 2 and 3 maybe could have been reversed.
No, because you have to establish Bhagavan as the predominant. Mm. Then you can work with the others nicely, because if you approach the other way, it's just like this. Basically, whatever is your perspective, your first perspective, that's what you view everything else from. Mm. So if you view it from Bhagavan, right, then the other aspects fit into that, right? Otherwise, like, that's the difficulty with the mind bodies or the yogis, is Brahman or Paramatma are their primary focus. So to switch that to Bhagavan becomes higher. But when you're dealing with the top, then to accommodate the secondary features is easy. But if you're dealing with secondary to establish the top, it becomes a bit more difficult. Yes?
That second one should be Bhagavat with a short A. And Bhagavat Sandarbha refers to all six together.
Oh, okay. Okay. Right, because, and then having established that, then you can go into the element of Krishna as the supreme of the Bhagavan feature.
Yeah.
Right? Because you have to establish that as that is that the position of Vishnu is supreme, you know, in his personal feature. Then you can discuss the other, because then that's more of the mood, the taste. The one is just the fact.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Thank you.
So you can, as they develop, you can develop the taste, but the facts, then they generally like to keep similar. Then 5, Bhakti Sandarbha, explaining Bhakti, the process for approaching Krishna. That's the Abhideya Tattva. And Priti Sandarbha, explaining love of God, Prayojana Tattva. The overall plan of the Satsandarbhas is as follows. The first, Sri Tattva Sandarbha, establishes the Sambandha in general terms by proving Srila Jiva Goswami's thesis that Srimad Bhagavatam is the most appropriate source of spiritual knowledge in Kali Yuga, and it thoroughly describes the absolute truth. Right? So now that's in Kali Yuga. Actually, it's the best source anytime, because the principle of the position of pure bhakti and the position of Swayam Krishna, you know, or Braja Krishna, then is always the topmost aspect. So it's applicable at all times. But, meaning that the Bhagavat, it means the Parama, you say? The Tattva Sandarbha is establishing the position of the Lord. But you lost my... God, does that point to Chandra?
The
one
that's
No.
I saw him yesterday. He was talking about coming.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So maybe that's coming.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay, but it's the most appropriate in Kali Yuga because of the nature of the stories, and it's just sticking only to pure devotional service. There's nothing else that you have to deal with, right? Just like, let us say, before, means a good cook, right? Or even today, you have Jai Ho, Jani Tai, Jani Tai, Jai. Please. So, you know, let's say a good cook means they go to the markets, out of the way places, to get the exact ingredients they want. They know how to take it, how to prepare it, how to do everything so to bring it to the point where they can use it. Okay? Now, if you take your, you know, standard Kali Yuga cook, right? You know, and we're talking about someone who's cooking, right? You know, like, woo, you know. Is that they go to the market, you get this little thing that's, you know, a little, you know, whatever they make those little, you know, bowl, basket, carved, you know, things out of, that's got the vegetables already cut inside with a little wrap on top so you can look at. And then you have to go home and, you know, really sweat it out, you know, pulling the wrapping off, you know, and then throwing them away, you know, like that. You understand? So that's the point, is that even though that cooking process is valid at all times, the Bhagavatam, because of the story, it has nothing else. It makes it very easy for other people. Does that make sense? Well, someone who's more technically expert can deal with all the, you know, the skin, the seeds, the this, the that, and they can get down to the essence. Right? But as pointed out, is in this age, just that there's a concept that essence is good. You know, you're doing it now. You found, okay, wow, now we got something. Right?
Really going there.
You know, just like the other, just they're willing to cook. Yeah. Right? It's not just you buy the frozen thing, put it in the microwave, or Aribo. Right? Or even some won't do that. They'll just go to restaurants. Like that. I heard, I'm not sure, maybe it's in Hong Kong. A lot of the places don't have kitchens. Mm. It means, you know, enough to make some tea like this. But they don't have, because the places, it's so small. Okay. That there's no, so everybody just goes to restaurants. Mm. Just that nobody cooks. Mm. Right? Hmm?
Saves time.
Yeah, saves time. Yeah. Somehow the guy still has to throw out the garbage. But, you know. Okay. Okay. So Sri Tattvasandarbha establishes the Sambandha in general terms by proving Srila Jiva Goswami's thesis that Srimad Bhagavatam is the most appropriate source of spiritual knowledge in Kali Yuga, and that it thoroughly describes the absolute truth. The next three, Bhagavat, Paramatma, and Krishna Sandarbhas, elaborate on the Sambandha through explanations given in the Bhagavatam about the special character of the personality of Godhead, his relationships with his manifold energies, and his most essential identity as Sri Krishna. So then in here you're going to be establishing the Bhagavan feature, how he is, how do you say, you know, basically you could say is the Bhagavat the absolute truth, Paramatma, is the going to describe the energies of the Lord, the jivas, and all those different kind of things, the Sarva Shaktim aspect, and also the nature of the jivas. The Krishna Sandarbha is going to establish more the element that, you know, he is the supreme, so that is, he's the source of all the interaction and everything like that. It's not about the taste of it, that would be in Preeti. Mm-hmm. So then all the aspects of the Dasamul within Sambandha, you know, Praman and Prameyas are established in this, in Sambandha Tattva. Right? So it's very, you know, well sticking to Lord Chaitanya's philosophy. Mm. So it's kind of very natural to see that what Lord Chaitanya gave to the Goswamis, that he is now, having heard from Lord Chaitanya and the Goswamis, has now put together. It's, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has simply formalized that so we can appreciate that that's what's going on. Right? Yeah. Okay. The fifth, Sri Bhaktisandarbha presents the methods of devotional practice through statements from Srimad Bhagavatam. And sixth, the Priti Sandarbha discusses pure love of God according to the Bhagavatam. Outline of Tattva Sandarbha. Sri Tattva Sandarbha consists of 63 anuchedas, or sections, composed mostly in Sanskrit prose. Anucheda basically is presenting, means you're talking about, it's working within logic, right? So in logic means you have a thesis, right? That thesis is then expanded on, given explanation, concluding, I mean, how you say, synthesizing any opposing arguments and then restating that point as a conclusion. Mm-hmm. That's an anucheda. Mm-hmm. You understand? So the Panchanga Nyaya, that circle, that's mm-hmm. an anucheda. Okay. Vedanta Sutra is in exactly the same way. Mm-hmm. We just know the sutras, but when the acharyas write the commentaries on that, then you see the anuchedas. Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? And Adhikarana is something that ends somewhere else? Or?
Adhikarana. Mm-hmm.
Those are the five Adhikaranas, or what you just mentioned, Vishai, Samshai, Pulipaksha, Siddhanta, and Sangati. Those are the five Adhikaranas.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
That makes sense?
Yeah.
Because that's logic, that's Nyaya. So that's why it's called Nyaya Prashtam. Mm-hmm. It's the authority based on Nyaya. Yeah. Right? Then you have Shruti Prashtam, and then Smriti Prashtam.
Maharaj, it is composed in Sanskrit prose, means it is Vedic Sanskrit?
No. Only the Vedas are in Vedic Sanskrit.
Right.
Like that. Any other, literature, it's all in classical. So the Veda, because the Vedic Sanskrit means that the verses are chanted according to particular notes. Right? And so there's elements of grammar that the Vedic has that the classical doesn't. Like that. Because the classical, it's just the grammar of it, how it's held together, the meanings. But it's not that you have to use a particular tune to chant it. Or, does that make sense? But the Vedic grammar, there's, besides the 3,000 shlokas, sutras, that describe the various aspects of Sanskrit grammar, there's an extra like 300 that describe how these notes work. Right. If this word's next to that word, it changes the notes. Right? On its own, it maybe had the notes in one way, but if it's next to one word, it'll change. If it's next to a different word, it's different again. Right? Because it has to match. Just like your element of Brahman. So there's three different swaras. Whether it's dealing with Brahman, meaning the Supreme, Brahman, meaning, Lord Brahma, or Brahman, meaning the jivas. It has three different kinds of notes. So you know by the notes which one is talking about. Does that make sense? So it's more elaborate. It's more... Okay. Or sections composed... 63 anuchedas. Or sections composed mostly in Sanskrit prose. While Srila Jiva Goswami did not specify, he means prose, it means it doesn't have a meter. Yeah. Mm. Right? Like the Vedanta Sutra, there's no meter. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? It's just the words are there and you chant. But let's say Gita, there is meter. Right. It's an anustup, so it has a specific meter. Mm. So the meter you have to follow, but the tune, as long as it matches the meter, it works. Right?
Like Purusha
Sukta. No, Purusha Sukta, that's Vedic. So that has meter and swaras. While Srila Jiva Goswami did not specifically indicate this division, pandits consider the text to be divided into three parts. One, Mangalacharan, text 1-8, invocation of auspiciousness. So he uses 8 verses for invocation. Some even use a whole chapter. Sometimes you can see short, but it's...
But this serves as the Mangalacharna for the entire Satsandarbha, not just Tattva
Sandarbha. Oh, okay. And Pramanakanda, text 9-28, Bhagavad epistemology, the source of valid knowledge, because you have to establish how you get knowledge, because otherwise, if you don't establish how knowledge is gained, then people have all kinds of ideas how you should get knowledge. And 3, Pramayakanda, text 29-63, Bhagavad ontology, the knowable objects of knowledge. Right? So epistemology establishes what is valid source of knowledge, and ontology means what is knowable. The Pramankanda of the Tattvasandarbha is a search for truth, much as the six systems of Vedic philosophy, Saddarshanam, beginning with Naya. So too do the Satsandarbhas begin by establishing the logical foundation. Because you have to make, that's always the first discussion, is what do you accept as valid sources of knowledge? Right? You always have to establish that. The Pramankanda thus serves as the epistemic source for the remainder of the Sandarbhas. Before we can elucidate these topics, we must first settle the question of Pramana, the reliable means of ascertaining facts, Tattvasandarbha 9. Does that make sense? So, not only is it a work complete in itself, but it's also establishing this epistemology and ontology for the whole Sandarbhas. Right? So that's why it's basically, you could say, it's establishing the Praman. Right? And then what are the elements of noble objects that will be discussed, so that you know them, understand their form. Then they can be expanded upon in the other sandarbhas. Does that make sense? Because in the Vedic, you generally have the first thing, which just lists what's there. Then you have the next level of explanation. Then you have the full explanation. Just like in the Adhikaranas, you have the thesis. Then you have its basic explanation, right? Your definition. Then you have the full explanation with examples and everything. So that's a standard Vedic approach. You see Rupa Goswami, they all use it in their writing. They just give one, it's just a straight list so that you know what's there. Because once you're familiar with the others and that list itself, then it serves to, you can remember from that, speak from that and everything. Like the sixth chapter of Nectar Devotion. It explains what is all the elements that will be for the whole rest of that section, that's the whole rest of that ocean. Right? So he'll give that, then he'll give some more explanation, then he gets right down into the detail of each one. So it's very, very standard way. And before that, you give the background, how you can establish that. So the first five chapters establish that. Does that make sense? Yes.
So what's his pramana that is accepted by everybody?
That I think we'll get into. You'll explain it here, no? Yes. No, it'll come up. It'll come up. But it's basically what we've always discussed. You know, I say Shabda is the main, and then the
Pratyaksha.
Pratyaksha. Yeah, Pratyaksha and Anuman as supporting. So even though that's what we deal with, the three, Gotama adds that fourth. There's 10 total, but different people. Basically, what it comes down to is pretty much all the 10 have a basis in some way.
Yeah.
But it's just a matter of, you count them as 10 separate things, or you show that this one is actually included in the other.
Yeah, it's in verse 9. It's in this.
Oh, so he'll get into all that.
Okay.
Jiva Goswami concerns himself in this section with the conditions of correct knowledge and the means of receiving this knowledge. How, in general, can human beings arrive at proper understanding of reality? He argues convincingly for the supreme self-evident authority of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This done, the Bhagavatam itself acts as the prime source of verification and remains so for the rest of the Sandarbhas. Right? So, having established it, then you can use it exclusively as the means to validate any point, that the point exists and its position and its relationships. Right? The second half of Tattvasandarbha, the Pramayakanda, ascertains the general nature of the supreme truth, or tattva, revealed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Prameya means that which is knowable, or the object of cognition. Right? So, what is knowable, but then the point is how do you know it? Right? Like that. Beginning from text 29, it describes the nature of the external world, its relationship to the individual, and the metaphysical aspects of ultimate reality. Yes.
Who's
Does he bring that out specifically in the Text 6? Text 6. It's coming.
Okay. He always does that.
That means he's thinking.
We've been waiting for some time.
Okay. Who's this for? Am I supposed to be? Can I go home now? Okay, well, text 6 isn't even in here.
Yeah.
It is?
This is already.
Page 24.
This is verses 1 to 9.
Oh, okay. Oh, that first. Oh, okay. 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 24. Text 6. Only one whose main desire is to worship the lotus feet of Lord Krishna should read this book. Everyone else I warn off of my curse.
Okay.
It was a good run.
We had a good run, yeah.
We got through a few days. Okay, verse breakdown. In this study guide, we have attempted to further subdivide Tathasandarbha into natural parts which reflect the author's flow of arguments. Section 1, the Mangalacharan, 1 through 8. Section 2, Pramanakanda, 9 through 28. So that has the subsections of 1, establishing Srimad Bhagavatam as the supremely authoritative source of knowledge, 9 through 18. So A, the Vedas are the best evidence, 9 through 11. The Puranas are Vedic, 12 through 15.4, because otherwise some will argue that it has nothing to do with the Vedic literature. So you have to establish it as Vedic literature. Right? C, the superior position of Vyasadeva, because otherwise if the author's position isn't established, then they'll say, well, who's this guy? You know? D, the Puranas are superior to the Vedas, right? Because they have, you know, some special, accessibility that the Vedas don't have. So that's the superiority. So E, there's a hierarchy among the Puranas, right? So therefore, Bhagavad is the supreme. And F, Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost scripture. So not only is the topmost Purana, but if it's superior to the Vedas, then it's the topmost scripture. Right? And two, identifying and glorifying Srimad Bhagavatam, 19 through 26. The authoritative descriptions of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Garuda Purana glorifies Srimad Bhagavatam. Various commentators establish the position of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam explains its own position, the preeminent position of Sukadeva Goswami, right? Because otherwise he's the speaker. We've already established Vyasa as the writer, but what about the speaker? Right? Concluding confirmations of the unique importance of Srimad Bhagavatam. Right, so then just things to wrap it all up, because you open with it, you should close with it, right? Because otherwise to reiterate, it makes it strong, right? That makes sense? Yeah. Okay, and then three, methodology and sources of reference for Tathasandarbha. Okay, section 3, Pramaya Khanda, 29 through 63. Then one, defining the message of Srimad Bhagavatam by considering the realizations of Sukadeva Goswami and Vyasadeva. 29-49. So that has understanding the realizations. B. Sambandha defeating Mayavad and establishing Achinta Veda Veda Tattva on the basis of Vyasa's realizations. And C. Abhideya and Prayojana understood on the basis of Vyasa's realization. Right. So you have to establish Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana. Does that make sense? Because as we remember, Sankarshan, when you're establishing, includes the Tattva aspects of Abhideya and Prayojana, because you're just seeing the relationships between Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, that's still Sambandha. Right? But then when you're going to apply it, that's Abhideya, that results and that experience gained, that's Prayojana. Okay, so one shouldn't get confused as overlapping using these words, because many times those who haven't fully appreciated this approach, they'll take those aspects and put them out into Abhideya. But then you don't actually understand the position of Abhideya in connection with Sambandha. Right? Does that make sense? The whole connection between each other doesn't work. Right? Then, big two, Srimad Bhagavatam's meshes defined in terms of understanding the Jiva and the Supreme Brahman. So, in there, the absolute truth is non-dual consciousness. the jivas are his parts, and B, understanding the absolute truth by understanding the jiva. Because the point is we have to, it's called self-realization, because you have to understand who you are. But that understanding who we are is that part and parcel of the Lord. So that way you understand the Lord. You actually understand the Lord by understanding who you are. Right? Or you could say you actually understand who you are by understanding the Lord. So you can't separate them, because being part and parcel of the Lord, you can't know who you are unless you know. You know, it's just like you can't understand what a full engine is, you know, on its own. It has all its parts. And if you just have a piston, what does that mean? You know, so then there's the whole rest of the thing to make it work. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's all... That's the point of the non-difference. Like that. But the point is, jiva's always part. Krishna is always the complete whole. Right. C, conclusion. Understanding the absolute truth by understanding Srimad Bhagavatam's 10 topics. A, Srimad Bhagavatam's 10 topics as presented by Sukadeva Goswami. Right. Sukadeva's understanding of the 10th topic, the absolute truth, as the shelter of all shelters, who is his own shelter. Right. So Krishna is his own shelter. Because somebody, well, who shelters him? He is his own shelter. You say, how's that possible? That's God. Right? Everybody else has to be sheltered, but he is his own shelter. Right? That's otherwise, how does it work? Because otherwise people always try to take that on, and that way then throw the whole thing out, and now let's go, you know, go to the movies or something. Yeah, right. See, Sutta Goswami lists the 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam and confirms that the absolute truth is Krishna, the ultimate shelter. Right? Yes. Okay. Just a side thing is that the 10 topics aren't connected. We don't artificially try to categorize. The 10 topics don't fit with the cantos or this or that. They are the topics that are discussed. Some may be more prominent in one place or more prominent in the other, or set the flavor or the basis of. That's why Prabhupada gives the different cantos the names. Right? That makes sense. But it's not that. It's the only thing that's in a canto. So Prabhupada hasn't done that, so, you know, the acharyas say don't do it, so we just...
generally don't do it.
Yes, it's just a pretty general. Section 1, Mangalacharan, 1 to 8. Okay, so this whole, what's the rest of this is 1 to 8?
1 to 9.
1 to 9.
Bonus verse.
Oh, bonus verse. Have we been good? Okay. Text 1. Krishna Varnam Tvisha Krishnam Sango Pangasta Parshadam Yajai Sankirtana Prayer Yajanti Hi Sumedasa. In the age of Kali, intelligent persons perform congregational chanting to worship the Lord, who constantly sings the name of Krishna. Although his complexion is not blackish, he is Krishna himself. He is accompanied by his associates, servants, weapons, and confidential companions. This is 11th canto, or it's all 12th? 11. Isn't this the last verse of the Bhagavatam?
No.
This is not the last verse.
No.
Oh. Okay, commentary. For the Bhagavat Sandarbha, the set of six books of which this Tattva Sandarbha is the first, Sri Jiva Goswami begins the invocation for auspiciousness, Mangalacharan, with the text of Sri Srimad Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam, which the entire set has been written to explain, is unique even among the 18 major Puranas. It is more coherently organized, its style is more elegant, and it focuses more than any other on a single theme, the supremacy and the all attractiveness of the original personality of Godhead, Swayam Sri Krishna. So it means, because it is, that's why it said it's the mature, right, fruit of Vyasadeva's writing. So then it's going to have all those elements more and more developed. There's a different Puranas, they touch on the five topics. And some of them are Mahapuranas, so they touch on the 10. Right? But the organization of the Bhagavatam and how it's done, then is the most elaborate. Right? The organization, the expansion of the descriptions, the poeticness of it, everything is much, much more developed. We were talking with one Madhva, pundit, you know, who's very expert in verses and chanting. He was saying in Bhagavatam, there's over 500 different meters are used, right? But this is not major meters. This means that your major meters are all used, but these are subsections of meters that most, unless you're a real scholar, wouldn't even know exist. Like we just say Anustup, it has the eight, but there's so many varieties of Anustup. Like that, I don't know, there's a lot of them. Like that. So there's 18 main chandas or meters. So that means, and these 500 means these are all subsections of that. So sometimes he uses a whole verse in one, sometimes he uses the first two lines in one and the second two in another. He does all kinds of amazing things with it. So this pundit was just explaining how Bhagavatam has the maximum amount. You don't see that in any other literature, so many meters being used. All the standard schools of Vaishnavism implicitly trust Srimad Bhagavatam and read it regularly. As I was mentioning, this is a Madhva scholar, and so to be able to say there's 500 meters, he didn't just say, well, there's a lot of them. 500, and that's his specialty. That means he counted them. The followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu especially revere it as their primary scripture. Right? Because everybody has a primary scripture. Our scripture is Bhagavatam. That is our work. Just like for the Shris, it will be Vishnu Purana, you know, and its support will be Vishnu Dharmotra. Right? So that's it. So everybody has their book, right? For the Shankarites, then it will be Vedanta Sutra or the Upanishad. But Vedanta Sutra is it. You understand? So that's where it'll start, then it'll go out from there. So our book is Bhagavatam. That's why Gita is preliminary and the Chaitanya Charitamrita is advanced study. But it's all about Bhagavatam. It's the study. The word Mangala Acharana literally means an enactment of auspiciousness, usually in the form of a sanctifying poetic invocation. Literary tradition in India dictates that authors begin their serious works with one or more verses of Mangala Acharana. The reasons for this convention are twofold. First, that such prayers help remove obstacles to assure the successful completion of a book. Right, either by writing or studying or reading or whatever. And second, that cultured authorities have set such a precedent. Right? It means all the great personalities have done it, so naturally it's a good thing to do. Yes?
I ask you, one use the Mangalacharan for the successful completion of an essay?
Yeah, as long as he could pull it off. You know, but I'm saying when he got only 200 words and he spent the first 50 on that, then it better be good, the last.
Yes. We receive a few that have, and I don't generally count those in the word count.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that happened once. That one pundit, someone said that you have to explain it in 108 verses. So he said 108 verses, and everybody was cheering and this and that, and the pundit was just sitting there with a, you know, stone face. And so what's the problem? Like, he just did that. He says, yeah. But that was only 107, because he said in invocation. So where's the 108? So it happens. Forewarned. Okay. As mentioned in the Govinda Bhashya, Shukshma Tika 111, Nir vi nai tat purtaye shishtachara pari prapta mangalam acharati. Quote, to remove obstacles and assure the completion of a work, one should offer an auspicious invocation following the precedent of the culture. Right? So in other words, this is then stated by Govindaji himself. So that's it. So that's the way Krishna likes it. Because otherwise, if you do that, means whatever you're going to do, or whatever you are doing, you'll see its connection to the authority. Right? Because everybody who's working in Krishna Lila is working according to some authority. Right? So, you know, one can say, well, Mother Jashoda may not do that, but she's not Jiva, so you don't have to worry about it. Every last single Jiva that there is in existence, right, all the unlimited, you can't count them, Jivas, all of them work under the internal potency. So therefore, you know, I mean, excuse me, unless anybody here is internal potency, then you write an invocation. Okay? You know? Does that make sense? Okay. Great authors use the Mangalacharana to summarize a book's message concisely and establish at the very onset an elevated level of discourse. Right? Do you mention about the, what do you say?
Anupana
Chaturthi. Yeah, again.
Verse 9.
Okay. Srila Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami, after offering his Mangalachar at the heart of the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, lists the purposes of inculcation verses. Se Mangalacharana hai tri vidha prakar vastu nirdesha ashirvada namaskar. The Mangalacharana may do three things: define the objective, offer benedictions, and offer obeisances. Sisiadi 122. Right? So, means it's just like if you get a book, you don't know the book, you read the Mangalacharana, you can understand what the book is about, right? Who it's meant for, like that. Then you know whether it's for you to read or not. And as Jiva Goswami points out, if this is not your purpose, this book's not for you, so put the book down, right? Others, it's just you may get into it or may not. But here he's just, just don't even bother, right? Like that. A few of the acharyas do that. Yeah. Kavi Karnapur does that. Rupa Goswami does that. It's just like, step away. Yeah. Okay. In this opening verse, Sri Jiva has defined the objective. In the following seven verses, which round out the Mangalacharan, he repeats the objective and also offers blessings and obeisances. Right? So in other words, it's about the process of worshiping Krishna with a desire for prema with his associates by the Sankirtan mission. Right? So that's what is the subject matter. By first citing a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam instead of composing a showcase verse of his own, Sri Jiva turns our attention to the Bhagavatam itself, the subject, Vastu, of Sri Bhagavat Sandarbha. He forgoes opportunities to display his eloquence throughout the Sandarbhas in similar fashion. Because right? It's about getting to the essence, it's not about showcasing his scholastic abilities like that. Because Bhagavatam already has done that to such a degree that why it's not about, he did something, so now I'll do it. Everybody does their thing and that kind of thing. Yes?
Jiva Goswami is in his Sandarbhas means, because it's in a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, so it has to have the same goal, that same what we discussed right now.
That means because it's a commentary, it should bring out or highlight what is the actual purpose or subject matter of the text that you're commenting on. So the Sandarbha, so he's established Bhagavatam as the highest literature, and then is bringing out what are the elements. So instead of here showcasing himself by very nice Mangalacharan, he's trying to showcase the Bhagavatam and what it has to bring out. Because otherwise it's a very standard thing. Because now if the original verse is done in very, very wonderful poetics and all that, then people may be very interested. Right? But it's not... So they're thinking, wow, it's a scholarship, so then what's the rest of the work like? But here he's just bringing out, no, this is Bhagavatam. And so then by studying the Bhagavatam, then you'll be able to understand this essence. So he's showing how to find that essence in Bhagavatam. You see, it's even one of the questions of the sages, right? So much is described, how do you know what the essence is, right? So now Bhagavatam already describes that essence, but how to put that all together so you can practically see that, use it. Because the Sandarbhas are a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, they naturally inherit the subjects of the Bhagavatam. The Supreme Lord Krishna, along with his avatar expansions and his generations of devotees. The verse under discussion taken from the 11th canto also indicates these subjects. Jiva Goswami's commentary, the Sarva Samvadini, begins here. Now the book named Sri Bhagavat Sandarbha opens with a verse from Sri Bhagavatam, Krishna Varanam. So this means his commentary on, the 11th canto.
This is the first verse of Sarva Sambhavi, and he's commenting on the first verse of Sarva Sambhavi.
Oh, so this is the commentary on the Sandarbha.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Now the book named Sri Bhagavat Sandarbha opens with the verse, because otherwise you're putting it in, you want to make it exact, but then people may or may not always exactly catch what you've done. So even though he's giving the essence, because it is essence, we may not quite understand it, but you want that logical sequence, right? That exactness. So the commentary can bring out the discussions on things so you can actually understand the connections and everything, the definitions. Now the book named Sri Bhagavat Sandarbha opens with a verse from Sri Bhagavatam, Krishna Varnam. Does it say Sri Bhagavat? Bhagavat also opens with this? But this is supposed to be tough.
You're just saying it's a verse from Bhagavatam.
But it says now the book named Sri Bhagavat Sandarbha.
Just to clarify, it's the whole six together are referred to as Shachandarbhas and also Bhagavat Sandarbha, like Antrivi Masha was saying.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a long
A. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Sandarbha is a book within the six. Yeah.
And with short A.
Okay, yeah. Short A is the specific Sandarbha, and long A means all six together. So Sri Bhagavata Sandarbha opens with a verse from Sri Bhagavatam, Krishna Varnam, a verse affirming and praising Sri Krishna Chaitanya Dev as the personality of Godhead. A verse graced by the special sense that here is the Lord worshipped by Vaishnavas in the age of Kali. That he is the Supreme Lord is self-evident to the external and internal vision of millions of great devotees. By revealing himself in this descent, Lord Chaitanya spread thousands of Ganga-like rivers filled with the intoxicating nectar of the rarest pure love, a love focused on the lotus feet of him, the original personality of Godhead. Thus, he founded thousands of disciplic lines for which he is the worshipable deity. And SS means?
Sarvasambhadani.
Oh, Sarvasambhadani one. The verse is originally part of a long conversation between King Nimi and the nine Yogendra sages, which covers a range of theological subjects. In chapter 5, Nimi asks Yogendra Karabhajana about the Supreme Lord's Yuga avatars. Prior to reciting the above verse, Karabhajana describes the Yuga avatar in Satyayuga as white-complexioned and dressed in the cloth of a brahmachari, a celibate student. This avatar, called by such names as Hamsa, teaches the method of meditational devotion. The sage goes on to describe the Treta Yuga avatar. His complexion is red. Among his names are Vishnu and Yajna. And he teaches the rituals of Vedic fire sacrifices, the method of devotional practice for Treta Yuga. The avatar for Dwarka Yuga is a king, dark blue in complexion and dressed in yellow. Prayed to is Vasudeva, Sankarsana, Prajumna, and Aniruddha. This is worshipped by the combined methods of the Vedas and Tantras, right? So that's the Pancharatra, because that's a combination of those two. Right? Although not identified explicitly, this Yuga avatar is easily recognizable as Krishna, the son of Vasudeva. Karabhajana then introduces our Mangalacharna verse with the following statement. Iti dvapara urdvisha stuvanti jagad ishvaram Nana Tantra Vidhanena Kalavapi Tata Shvinu. In this way, O King, people in Dwapara Yuga glorify the Lord of the universe. In Kali Yuga also, people worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead by following various regulations of the revealed scriptures. Now kindly hear of this from me. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.31, footnote 1. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the word Nada Tantra Vidhanena indicates the importance in Kali Yuga of the Vaishnava scriptures known as the Pancharatras, or Pancharatras. It is stated in the Bhagavatam, Stri Shudra Dvija Bandhu Nam Traina Shruti Gochara. In Kali Yuga, it is impossible for ordinary people to perform highly technical Vedic sacrifices or the unbearable penances of the mystic yoga system. Such standard Vedic processes are practically inaccessible for the spiritually retarded population of Kali Yuga. Yes. So what's the politically correct term of how you say it?
Dis- disabled? Learning disabled?
Learning disabled. So the spiritually learning disabled population of Kali Yuga.
Devotionally challenged.
Yes. Devotionally challenged population of Kali Yuga. It doesn't quite have the same ring as retarded. Right? And the fun part is retarded was the politically correct term. With that. Therefore, the simple process, right, okay. So this Pancharatra element here then is very important. It's not the primary. It's the supportive, but it's still the transcendental. Many times devotees are dealing with the Pancharatra as if it's just another opera vidya. It's just another material Vedic subject matter. No, but it's transcendental subject matter because it's directly about the Supreme. So he's saying, this is what is used in this age, because the Vedic is not, you know, it's just not possible. Like, means many of you may have seen on Saturday morning when we do the yajna. So that is using all the Vedic mantras and rituals as given in to us by Gopal Bhatta Goswami from the Samaveda. Right? Now that, to get that established, that the boys can do that, has been something we've been working on since the mid-80s, in our early 80s, right? So that means that's nearly 30 years to get that established. And that's just how you open and close a yajna. That's not the actual technical Vedic ritual. The ritual we're using, that's also Pancharatra, it's from the Bhagavatam. Right, 11th canto, and it describes the deity, it describes there what to do. So we're just using that. You understand? So opening and closing, and people are freaking out. This is too much. Can it be so? Can it be this? Can it be that? You know, or he gives the Vedic, you know, the wedding, you know, all that. It takes, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours, depending upon the speed and how everything works, and if the girl comes on time. You know, all these, you know, so many considerations. But so many times that people, do we have to do all that? Can't we do something to this? And say, you know, what do you want? Just, I do? Yeah. this can't handle it, right? The biggest samskara in their whole life, you know, something for preparation for 30 years, and they want to cut it down. You know, can't it be half an hour? You know, it's a big deal, you know, and get to the prashad, and everyone can come over and go, wow, such a nice sari, and all that kind of jazz. So, you know. Does that make sense? You know, so this is why he's pointing out that the Pancharatra is therefore the scripture that can be followed. And we see even there, that's been simplified for us. Right? Like that. We're freaking out, you gotta come in, wash your hands, wash the thing, not touch all the stuff together. You know, this is like, you know, getting to be rocket science here. And but we just pick it up and start showing it. But Sanatana Goswami, he gives that. You know, first you worship the, you know, you respect the item being worshipped. You know, then the Lord who is going to be worshipped, offered to. Then you do the thing. Then you have to appear that offer it to the Lord. You know? So, I mean, the artik itself would take at least, you know, possibly double the time. Because you're technically going through all these things. Does that make sense? So it's been simplified down in a very nice way by, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives and Rupa Goswami gives simplified forms that therefore then those in the Gaudiya line have given a very, you know, nice form that we basically are using.
In some places it's also been simplified down to just no shoes allowed in the temple.
Oh, okay. Well, that's nice. I remember when I came to, I think it was Colorado, Denver, excuse me. I think Denver. When I first came to the Denver Temple, then I think there were like two entrances to the house. May have been even three. You know, it's quite a big house and everything. But at each door, there was a, you know, one of those little like baby bath things, and next to it a folded towel. The shoes stayed outside. You had to step in there, step on the towel, then you could go inside. So even if you went outside for something, any time you came in, you stepped in that water and stepped on the towel before going in. That was how clean the temple was. So that they're not using their shoes, that's really an advance moving forward, right? Okay. Therefore, the simple process of glorifying the personality of Godhead by chanting his holy names is essential in this age. I like this second day. There's one like that in Brahma Samhita. The Jiva Goswami, his purport is one sentence, and then the rest of it is just put on. Where the Lord Vishnu appears as a yuga. No, we're on the wrong one. See, the names is essential in this age. Such devotional process as chanting the holy names of the Lord and worshipping his deity form are elaborately described in the Vaishnav Shatras known as Pancharatra. Right, so even the Pancharatra is describing the process of chanting. Right, that we have beads, we chant 108, we don't chant on the Krishna bead. You start here, go around, go back, you have that. That's all Pancharatra. Such tantric scriptures are referred to in this verse, and it is stated that in Kali Yuga, these devotional processes, taught by great acharyas such as Narad Muni, are the only practical means for worshipping the Lord. Bhagavatam 11.5.31 purport. Right. So that was from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But this is from... Oh, okay, that's based on what he said, yeah. That's in the purport.
Yes.
Of the same verse.
The purport is fully in Bhaktisiddhanta.
Yes, okay. Okay, so now, top of 16. Okay. Where the Lord Vishnu appears as a Yuga avatar in Kali Yuga is sometimes a matter of controversy. Footnote 2. The rest of the page. Right?
Really
actually, it keeps going onto the next page. That's the, it's getting better.
It's more like a body note, not really a footnote.
Body note. A full body note.
Full body note.
Okay. For Gaudiya Vaishnavas, perhaps the most famous example of this controversy is the argument that took place between Gopinath Acharya and his brother-in-law Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya upon Lord Chaitanya's arrival in Jagannath Puri. We are reprinting it here at length, for its contents mirror that of the Tattvasandarbha to a great degree. Moreover, the dialogue provides application and context to our study. Okay. And this is being quoted from?
Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Okay. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, Sri Krishna is a very good name, but he belongs to the Bharati community. Therefore, he is a second-class sannyasi. Right, so he's basing everything on the external. Right, it's not the position of renunciation, the knowledge, this, that. It's just that the particular line he's coming in, it's just a lower grade of sannyasis. Right, because in these other grades, then you have to be from very good backgrounds, very knowledgeable. Then those sannyasis would initiate you. Right. I shall continually recite Vedanta philosophy before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu so that he may remain fixed in his renunciation and thus enter upon the path of monism. Right?
Good luck.
Yes. Gopinath Acharya and Mukunda Dutta became very unhappy when they heard this. Gopinath Acharya, because his idea was that he could come up to this higher level and then accept a higher order, because he was saying, he just from looks, just by understanding the Sharira Shastra, he had such lakshanas that he must be a very, very elevated special personality. So he was feeling bad. Why is he in this lower level? So he must have been there because of lack of knowledge and that. So now he'll give him that sense. He is the top monist in India.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. So then, he would have, it's not just purely false ego. It's false ego, but it's not purely false ego. Right? It's just, he doesn't understand the transcendental position. Right? Mm. Gopinath Acharya and Mukunda Dutta became very unhappy when they heard this. Gopinath Acharya therefore addressed Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya as follows. My dear Bhattacharya, you do not know the greatness of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All the symptoms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are found in him to the highest degree. Those who are ignorant of this connection find the conclusion of knowledgeable men very difficult to understand. So, who's actually knowledgeable? You find it very difficult to understand the Vaishnavas. Or you could say the Vaishnavas have a great difficulty understanding those who are ignorant, right? So their connections that they make, even though they're very scholarly, it doesn't make any sense. Right? Which Lord Chaitanya will I just say bring out. The disciples of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya retaliated. By what evidence do you conclude that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Lord? Right? They already mentioned like that. All the symptoms are there, so that's the point, is those symptoms. They don't know, right? And Brahman doesn't have any symptoms. So Gopinath Acharya replied, the statements of authorized acharyas who understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are proof. The disciples of the Bhattacharya said, we derive knowledge of the absolute truth by logical hypothesis. Gopinath Acharya replied, one cannot attain real knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by such logical hypothesis and argument. If one receives but a tiny bit of the Lord's favor by dint of devotional service, he can understand the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are a great scholar and a teacher of many disciples. Indeed, there is no other scholar like you on earth, right? Because his scholastic ability is great. One always has to be able to separate the two. Is one's ability has to be appreciated for what it is. Then there's how they're using it, right? Like you see, is that so many times scriptures they'll talk about how someone's so knowledgeable, so qualified, so charitable, or you know, whatever. But they made this mistake. Right? Or the Kshatriyas, you know, how great and powerful they are, but because they're out here fighting, then they'll start finding the weakness. Right? So the ability to be able to see the individual nature and then how it's applied. Right? Does that make sense? Right? Because otherwise you make mistakes of thinking that if something is done in a particular way, that must fall with the person. You know what I'm saying? It negates it. You know, it's just like, let's say, someone is, let's say someone's a great cook, right? You know, just the thing. Okay, but let's say he's using an aluminum pot and there's somebody who's very eco-conscious and so they're thinking, this is not good. Right, so now the modern tendency is he's not a cook. No real cook would cook in a luma. But that's not the Vedic approach because it's not real. What do the two got to do with each other? Cooking ability and then what you work with, that's two different things. Right? So the point is the person's a good cook, but he could also consider in his cooking what kind of utensils, you know, would be, you know, more favorable, or at least if this is the guy that's going to eat, then, you know, that he shouldn't know about it, or, you know, use something else. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? But it's two different things. Otherwise, this is a general tendency, because as we saw before in Nyaya, if you can find a fault in somebody, then that itself can break down the whole argument. Not that it actually does, but because you throw it out of the intellectual platform into the emotional, then you can break them down emotionally and this way win the argument. So this is generally the position used in Kali Yuga, like that. It works really well because people get emotionally upset very easily. And it's easy to get emotionally upset yourself, so hey, it works great. You know? Okay. Okay, indeed, there's no other scholar like you on earth. Nonetheless, because you are bereft of even a pinch of the Lord's mercy, you cannot understand him, even though he is present in your home. Right? Pinch. A pinch is small. Right? It is not your fault. It is the verdict of the scriptures. It's not like, you know, it's just the way it is. He's trying to point out it's facts. That's the thing, is that the Vedic, talking about the modern, prides itself in being open and everything. But it's actually not. It just means open means I can just say whatever I feel like. But the Vedic is actually open because it's about facts. No, this is just the fact. It's not your fault that you don't know about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's that you're using a process of logic that can't know the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's why you don't know. So here's the Supreme Personality of Godhead sitting in your house. You don't know it, even though you're the greatest scholar in India. Right? So, you know, don't feel bad that, you know, there's something wrong with your scholarship. Right? There's no fault there. The problem is you don't have the Lord's mercy. That's what makes the difference between the two. Does that make sense? So this is the Vedic approach, the culture. So it's very open, but at the same time, it's very nice. That's the whole Vedic thing, is that it's able to deal with both at once. Well, the modern, you're either open or you're nice. Yeah. You can't be both at once. With the Vedic, you can do both at once. Right? And you see, it's very personal. It's dealing with him as a person and everything. Right? Okay. You cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead simply by scholarship. Right? Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya replied, "My dear Gopinath Acharya, please speak with great care. What is the proof that you have received the mercy of the Lord?" Right? So even if we accept this, you're making this statement very strongly as if you have it, so how can you do? So speak very carefully. Right? Because you also get the idea here of Sarvabhauma is the older brother. Right? Otherwise he wouldn't use that. You know, I mean, the topic would have been approached differently. How they're interacting, the etiquette would be slightly different. Right, because he's warning him, while the other is glorifying the other. So that would indicate that he's the younger brother, Gopinath.
Brother-in-law.
He's a brother-in-law. Okay. Oh, brother-in-law. Okay, yeah. But he must be younger. Like that. Gopinath Acharya replied, "Knowledge of the Summum Bodham, the Absolute Truth, is evidence of the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Despite directly perceiving the symptoms of the Supreme Lord in the body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you cannot understand him." Right? Because that's why he was attracted. When he saw him come in, he was just saying he has all the auspicious lakshanas. But what he can't connect is those auspicious lakshanas belong to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even though he knows them all, like all the ones in the Nectar Devotion, when it gives the 64 qualities, it opens with those 32 lakshanas. He can see those. But he still can't make the conclusion that therefore this is the Supreme Lord. Right? Because he lacks that Lord's mercy.
He's not a friend or devoted, so he can't know.
Yes. You know, he's there's not friend, he's not devoted, he has no interest. Right? Because he's a monist. Right? You know. And as Gopinath Acharya says, you know, you're not to blame, you know, you're a monist. Of course you don't know anything. You know? What to do. You know? This is commonly called illusion. A person influenced by the external energy is called Bahirmukha Jana, a mundane person, just because despite his perception, he cannot understand the real substance, right? Because when we say, in the general tense, if we say, a mundane person, we will mean someone who is uneducated, uncultured, you know, self-centered, you know, a bit of a brute or, you know, I can't even remember them now. There's an island out in the Aegean Sea. Or maybe no, it's farther south. I think it's in a Cretan. You know? A Cretan, and then what's the one with the P? P-H. Philistine, you know, like that. But, you know, so I mean, there's so many different terms you can use for this. But the point is, here is the most educated and most cultured person in India, you know, by the Shastric definitions. But it's mundane. Right? So it's just, you know, it's a fact. So, but because despite his perception, he cannot understand the real substance. Because they're always trying to get to the real substance. What is? So he's saying it's Brahman. But he can't understand that Brahman is sitting there in his house. You know, like that. Hearing Gopinath Acharya say this, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya smiled and began to speak as follows. "We are just having a discussion amongst friends, and considering the points described in the scriptures, do not become angry. I am simply speaking on the strength of the Shastras." You know, so what would be the replacement of that? The modern is, you know, don't be upset, I'm just speaking what I feel. You know, like that. So you shouldn't be upset, but the point is what you feel creates feeling. So why they shouldn't get upset?
Yeah.
You know, you shouldn't get upset because I'm just intellectualizing here. Yeah. You know, no one says that. Because you wouldn't get, you might, you know.
With all due respect.
Yeah, with all due respect. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
I don't mean to sound like a jerk, but
I don't mean to sound like a jerk. You know, it does sound like a jerk, but I don't mean to sound like a jerk. It doesn't mean I'm a jerk, but you know. "Please don't take any offense. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is certainly a great, uncommon devotee, but we cannot accept him as an incarnation of Lord Vishnu, because, according to Shastra, there is no incarnation in this age of Kali. Right? So here's another aspect of his scholarship can't understand even the revelation of the Supreme Lord, right? Let alone apply it to the situation. Right? So now this is a real Mayavadi. He knows the scriptures. He knows all about the personality of God. He knows all these different things. Right? Then someone like this, because he's actually looking for the absolute truth, then when he finds it, then it's fine. It's not that it's his identity. You know, so his identity is, I'm looking for the absolute truth, rather than I am a Mayavadi. Right? Okay. Another name for Lord Vishnu is Triyuga, because there's no incarnation of Lord Vishnu in Kali Yuga, because they're saying the Supreme Lord, that this is Vishnu. Indeed, this is the verdict of the revealed scriptures. Right? So he smiled because he... Upon hearing this, Gopinath Acharya became very unhappy. He said to the Bhattacharya, right, not only unhappy, he thought he understood, he just couldn't make the connection. So now he's even unhappy again, because he can't even tell from the scriptures that there is definition of the Lord in this age. So he's even one more removed as just lacking the Lord's mercy. Because Lord Chaitanya mentions to Mayadevi, he says, now that I've appeared, now you can remove the illusion that covers the scriptures so that people can't tell that I'll appear. Right? He said to the Bhattacharya, right? Also, Acharya means that you're, you know, is the top, is, you know, it means is the great level, the one, the, you know, and Bhatta, you know, it means you're, you know, respected, generally you're topmost of your, who does worship. So Bhatta Acharya, that is the topmost of the Brahminical standard. Right? You consider yourself the knower of all Vedic scriptures. Srimad Bhagavatam and the Mahabharata are the two most important Vedic scriptures, but you have paid no attention to their statements. There is certainly an incarnation in every age, and such an incarnation is called the Yuga Avatar. But your heart has become so hardened by logic and argument that you cannot consider all these facts. Right? Become hardened, because before, he's the one who was supposed to have been teaching Lord Chaitanya when Lord Chaitanya went to Gurukul. But because he came in contact with the Mayavada philosophy, he became distracted and he left and went to Puri. Right? So Vidyavachaspati, he became the teacher. But originally, he was supposed to, because he's Brihaspati. So that's the point. This logic and argument just make the heart hard. Gopinath Acharya continued, there is no need to quote so much evidence from the Shastra, for you are a very dry speculator. There's no need to sow seeds in barren land. When the Lord will be pleased with you, you will also understand these conclusions and will quote from the Shastras. The false arguments and philosophical word jugglery of your disciples are not faults of theirs. They have simply received the benediction of Mayavada philosophy. What to do? Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, 672-109. Gopinath Acharya concludes his polemic against dry scholarship by citing a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. Quote, in almost all cases, whatever learned brahmanas speak becomes accepted. Nothing is impossible for one who takes shelter of my illusory energy and speaks under her influence. Right? Yeah. Nothing is impossible. Right? It means, you see, people come out the most amazing things. You know, you have it just like the other day, I was thinking, just the influence of the illusory energy. You have a system in English that of how people learn to read English, because English being a combination basically of words, you know, originating in Latin but coming through French and German, you know, have come into that and been mixed together, because basically it was, you had the Celts who were there before, then you had all the various Germanic tribes that came in, the French, you know, then came and took over, you know, there's a real mixed bag, right? And so you had this language, and it's because of this, it's very hard to read. It's not like any other language in the world where you just learn the letters and you can read it.
Yeah.
Right? You know, it's like, you know, any language of the world, a five-year-old in that language can read it. He may not understand what it means, but he can read it. Mm-hmm. Right? So then they had this system that they've been using for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, like this. But then one day, a group of intellectual, you know, teachers decide that this is insulting to the children, because what they're doing is they're learning to read by reading all this babble. You know, it doesn't have any meanings, but all the different combinations of the letters and the sounds is done in a very consistent way, so that the children learn that these combinations make these sounds. Because otherwise, in the language, not, you don't know. Like, even sometimes I'll come across a word, if I haven't seen it, I don't know what sounds those letters can make, because some of those letters have 5 to 6 different sounds you can make with them.
Yeah.
Like O-U-G-H has 6 different sounds it can make. So which one would you use? And whichever one you say, there's always somebody in the audience who will say, well, actually, what to do? That's just the way it goes. You know. So this is the illusion. This is Maya. And so, since that time, now it's been what, 230 or 240 years? 210 years. They've been fighting over what's the best way to teach the English, because no system that they use is very efficient. But before that, they had this perfect system they've been using for hundreds of years. Anyone sitting in their house could teach it to their kid, right? You just sit there, you know, like that, and do it, and anybody could read. You know what I'm saying? This is Maya. This is how she covers the scholarship. Even though they're so intelligent, they can't catch it. That's just Maya's trick. So this is what he's talking about. So there's nothing that they can't accomplish. You know what I'm saying? So by their words, they come up with all kinds of amazing things that just don't work. It's not logical. You know, just like we've shown so many times, is that if you take it and put it into a practical thing where you're dealing with dead matter, everybody on the planet will agree it has to be done in one way. But as soon as we apply it to relationships, they'll all say, no, it works in the opposite way. And it never works. And everybody's thinking, no, it must work. This is the material energy. Yeah. She's good. You gotta give her credit. Okay. Yeah. Nothing is impossible for one who takes shelter in my illusory energy and speaks under her influence. Right? Srila Prabhupada accordingly comments on this verse and summarizes the exchange as follows. In this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead explains that his illusory energy can perform the impossible. Such is the power of the illusory energy. In many cases, philosophical speculators have covered the real truth and have boldly set forth false theories. In ancient times, philosophers like Kapila, Gotama, Jaimini, Kanada, and similar brahmanas propounded useless philosophical theories.
Yeah.
Right? And in modern days, so-called scientists are setting forth many false theories about the creation, backed up by seemingly logical arguments, right? Very logical, like everything is stuffed into one little, you know, infinitesimal point that you can't even see, and then it explodes, and then everything is there, right? Okay, logical. This is all due to the influence of the Supreme Lord's illusory energy. Right? Therefore, it sounds great to them, and others hear and go, oh yeah, right. The illusory energy, therefore, sometimes appears correct because it is emanating from the supreme correct. To avoid the very bewildering illusory influence, one must accept the words of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as they are. Only then can one escape the influence of the illusory energy. So it appears that it's correct because it's coming from Krishna. Krishna's correct, so therefore anything coming from him is perfect and complete. Right? So therefore, she can make anything seem correct. So if you connect it to the Lord, you see it in connection with the Lord, then you'll understand correct. So that's the problem. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya doesn't connect anything to the Lord. Therefore, he can't actually understand anything as it is. Right? And that's why for such personalities, logic is so important, because how expert they are at logic establishes them. Because if it wasn't for that, then, you know, if there wasn't authority, then who would be on the top? You know, everyone would just yell and scream. Okay. So, we started, back here. Okay. That was the second one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, top of 16 again. Kali is the most corrupt age, when even lesser demigods avoid visiting the earth, right? Mm-hmm. Prabhupada said they don't even come here to pass urine. That's how bad it is, right? And one of Vishnu's descriptive names is Triyuga, which should mean that he appears in only three ages. Okay, footnote 3. You keep going for some things. Oh, no. It's not bad. Don't keep that. Sridhar Swami gives a clever reconciliation of this controversy by defining Triyuga as follows. Yuga means couple, and tree means three. The Lord is manifest as three couples by his six opulences, or three couples of opulences, power and affluence, piety and renown, wisdom and dispassion. In that way, he can be addressed as Triyuga. The Lord is the personality of religious principles. In three millenniums, religious principles are protected by three kinds of spiritual culture, namely austerity, cleanliness, and mercy. The Lord is called Triyuga in that way also. In the age of Kali, these three requisites to spiritual culture are almost absent. But the Lord is so kind that in spite of Kali Yuga's being devoid of these three spiritual qualities, he comes and protects the people of this age and is covered incarnation as Lord Chaitanya, Srimad Bhagavatam 3.16.22 purport. So that's the whole point of the approaching according to the Acharyas, because they give that vision. Because otherwise, if you simply use only the logic, then you come up with a different conclusion like Sarvabhauma did. Right? But when you use the Acharyas, then the point is that since the Shastra says this, then it must be true. So how to show that it's true? So all these different aspects come like that. And then in so many ways, Triyuga, you can show all the aspects. Yes?
Wouldn't Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya say that we're overly analyzing when it's actually straightforward, Triyuga?
For someone whose occupation is overanalyzation, I don't think they would use that.
No, okay.
Yeah, I don't think so. You think so?
That's the taste.
Yeah, because their whole point is analyzing.
Yeah, as long as you come to the same conclusion as they do.
No. The point is analyzation.
Okay, yeah,
it's not conclusion.
No, that's true. Yeah.
Because the point is they can't actually defend their conclusion.
Yeah.
Because they said it's all Brahman. Mm. But if it's all Brahman, then that means illusion is also Brahman. Mm.
Yeah.
And if illusion is Brahman, then what's the problem with the illusion? But if illusion is not Brahman, then that means there's a dualistic concept.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? So from so many angles, there is no logical conclusion. It is just that taste. Right? So, therefore, the taste of discussing things is what's the point. Because they said by logic, right? What was the disciples?
Logical hypothesis.
Yeah, logical hypothesis. Right? But the hypothesis doesn't mean that it's absolute truth. It just means this is how seeing the facts and looking at it logically and presenting it logically, right? We've come up with this as a conclusion, but it's a hypothesis, because if you come up with something else, we can adjust it. Because as we see, even amongst the Mayavadis, there's two or three different foundations that they have to use, right? And I'm sure that they move around in them. It's not that, you know, one of them is specifically this and one another is that, because the point is you have the general, it's all Brahman, but as soon as you point out this dualistic aspect, then they have to start, the illusions come from the jiva, because they can't come from Brahman, but at the same time as the jiva already is the concept of illusion, so that doesn't work. So then you have to have the Brahma Pari Namava, right? And then that won't work, because then there's changeable, so you have to keep going back and forth. But because they're attached to that conclusion, they don't realize that they're moving around between a few different conclusions. Right? So at any stage in their life, they'll have one, but if someone deals very strongly, then they'll shift to another. You know, so just as Maya, you know, it gives a variety also, even though it's all one. You know. Otherwise, you get bored.
Yeah.
Okay, top of 17. There is Puranic evidence that seems to support this view. including a passage in the Vishnu Dharmotra, Purana, and the following prayer offered by Prahlad Maharaj to Lord Nrsingadev in the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Itam Nirichirya Garishi Deva Jasha Vatarer Lokan Vibats Yasi Hamsi Jagat Pratipan Dharmam Maha Purusha Pashi Yuga Nu Vritas Chanas Kalao Yad Abhavas Triyugo Tasatvam. In this way, my Lord, you appear in various incarnations as a human being, an animal, a great saint, a demigod, a fish, or a tortoise, thus maintaining the entire creation and killing the enemies of the world. According to the age, O my Lord, you protect the principles of religion. In the age of Kali, however, you do not assert yourself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore you are known as Triyuga, or the Lord who appears in three yugas. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.38. So in other words, here he asserts himself, he claims to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's why he's known as Triyuga. Because in the fourth yuga, he comes as the devotee. So even though he is the Supreme Lord, he's not taking that position. So here's another way then the term Triyuga then, you know, has meaning. Yes.
Doesn't the Krishna appear as his holy names in Kali Yuga?
That's there, but he's in his holy names in all yugas. That's the thing, is that in the four ages, right, it's the holy name that makes it work. Your meditation works by chanting, right? Because it's like Narad Muni gave Dhruva Maharaj Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So it's that chanting that makes the meditation work. In the Treta Yuga, then, the mantras that are chanted, because it's all about the Lord, as we saw by what Madhvacharya says, is that it's all about Vishnu. And the point is, since all the incarnations come from Krishna, it's actually about Krishna, right? And then it's deity worship, and that's all done through with mantra. So all it is in Kali Yuga, you take off the meditation, you take off the big yajnas, and you take off the elaborate deity worship. You know, it's simple. And all you're left with is just the chanting of the holy name. Like that. So that's why it's the universal element. You know, just like Bhagavatam is the universal element. Right? Okay. Later, when Sridhar Swami comes to the 11th canto, verse Krishna Varnam Tvisha Krishna, he reads Tvisha Krishnam as the euphonic combination of Tvisha Krishnam, black in complexion, instead of Tvisha Akrishnam, not black in Krishna, in complexion. Following this gloss, grammatically allowably, because the compound is inherently ambiguous. He then identifies Sri Krishna as the avatar being described, making him the avatar for both Dwapara and Kali. Right? And he's not wrong in doing that, because Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself. But Sridhar Swami wrote his commentary long before the advent of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whom Jiva and other Gaudiya Vaishnavas consider the actual Kali Yuga avatar, the initiator of the devotional methods of Samkirtana. Congregational chanting of the names of God. And Lord Chaitanya fits the description of Chanda Kalao, the hidden avatar in Kali Yuga, because he played the role of a simple devotee of Krishna, shunning the idea that he was Krishna himself. Footnote 4. Srila Prabhupada offers yet another reason for this behavior. Lord Chaitanya knew that in Kali Yuga there would be many bogus incarnations pretending to be God, and therefore he avoided asserting himself as the personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.38 purport. Lord Chaitanya had great respect for Sridhar Swami's explanation of Srimad Bhagavatam and did not like to hear criticism of the Swami's opinions. Still, the great commentator cannot have been expected to predict the Lord's future covert appearance, or even if he knew of it, he did not publicly reveal his insights. So that would be the general tendency to take, is that last point. Because the point is the Acharya won't be wrong here. So the point is he's saying that Krishna is the incarnation for Dwapara and for Kali, right? And he's not wrong, because Lord Chaitanya is. All it is that he's not revealing that means Lord Chaitanya. Yes.
Sridhar Swami is the Acharya of Rudra Sampradaya?
I think so. But that's not the point. He's the one that commented on Bhagavatam. You know, in other words, he's a personality that's there like Jayadev Goswami, They just appear. They're in a bona fide connected line, but the understandings that they have and everything, what they present, are not necessarily the understandings of that particular time or that line. You know, they're presenting those universal eternal elements that therefore when Lord Chaitanya can come along, that can be revealed. So Sridhar Swami's view of the, you know, how to approach the Bhagavatam and those things, and I said Jagdev Goswami's, you know, revelation of the nature of the interaction between Radha and Krishna, all these things are there, so that can be relished by the Lord when he comes. Right? Somebody says. So therefore it's not a matter of that we would even take the thing that he couldn't know about or wouldn't know about. If we take it about, it is correct from this point. But the point is because of what like Prabhupada says here, that he and because of these others, he's hiding from being known. Therefore, he's not known as Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Because Lord Chaitanya's associates, so many times, would start talking about him as Krishna. And then he covers his ears and, you know, like that. So it's like, they just see him as, you know, Braja Krishna shaved up with Radharani's color. You know, it's kind of like, you know, okay. Does that make sense? Yeah. In the Sarva Samvadini, Srila Jiva Goswami states that the Vishnu Dharmotra's denial of the Yuga avatar and Kali may apply to other Kali Yugas, but not to the present one. Right? Because Swayam Krishna and Lord Chaitanya Swayam Krishna, that they go together. Mm-hmm. Like that. Okay, footnote 5. Normally, the Supreme Lord restricts his pastime appearances to the first three ages, avoiding Kali Yuga. But when Krishna himself descends once in a day of Brahma, he puts aside this rule. His own appearance on earth lasts 125 years, extending into the first few years of Kali Yuga. And 5,000 years after that, he again comes again as the same Krishna, but in a different color, according to the Sarva Samvadi. Quote, thus, when we hear from the Vishnu Dharmotra and elsewhere that in Dwapara, he has the color of a parrot's wings, and that in Kali, he has a dark blue color. We should understand these statements to refer to the Dwapara age, in which Krishna does not descend. Right? Because when Swayam Krishna doesn't descend, then Dwapara is second. That's why it's, you know, Dva, right? It's two, and Tre is three. Because generally it comes that there's meditation, then there's deity worship, then there's Yajna, then there's the holy name. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's like that, it's switched the other way around. Right? So yes. And so when Sri Krishna does descend in a particular Dwapara age, Sri Gaura also descends in the Kali age that follows. This fact, accepted at face value, implies that Sri Gaura is a direct manifestation of Sri Krishna himself, because he always appears when Krishna appears, right? So therefore, that's the point, and it's that's the hidden aspect. So it doesn't go against what Sridhar Swami says, right? The Vishnu Dharmotra Purana asserts, right? Because you have to balance all these things. Lord Hari is not seen to assume a manifest form in Kali Yuga. He appears only in the other three ages, beginning with Krita Satya. Therefore, he's called Triyuga. But when the Kali Yuga has reached its end, Lord Vasudeva enters the body of Kalki, the proponent of Vedic truth, and reestablishes order in the world. Okay, Sarvasam Vadini 5. Okay. So, this would mean that therefore, when you take the 10 avatars, then Kali is put as the 10th. Because then he comes and reestablishes order. Because that's what they others do. But at that time, preaching is not necessarily a well appreciated, I say, exchange, right? So therefore he comes with, you know, a sword and, you know, deals with them in a language they can understand, right? And then you can start such a yuga again, right? So you can take that aspect. So in other words, Kali Yuga just basically goes to the dogs, and at the end then Kalki comes and sorts things out, right? But even if no one at that time appreciates, still the pastime is appreciated by others in the other ages. And so it's still the principle of for attracting the devotees, right? So in attracting the devotees, then one of the aspects is killing the demons, right? Because the conjugal rasa and the chivalrous rasa are the two most attractive features in the story, right? So therefore, the Lord will be glorified because he kills the demons. But it's not. That's not why he's coming. He's coming and killing demons so that it's an attractive feature for the devotees.
At the end of Kali Yuga, I'm sure it's very attractive.
Yeah. And so then, yeah. Okay, so that aspect is there. But it's not saying that there's not a problem. But it still, as we see by the wording, it still doesn't say. He says, Lord Hari is not seen to assume a manifest form in Kali Yuga. But Lord Chaitanya, is he manifest as the Supreme Personality of Godhead?
No.
But that doesn't mean he isn't there. Mm-hmm. You understand? So that's why he's saying, you could look at it this way. In other words, if someone really is bent out of shape about this, why worry about it? Because the point is we're not worried about the other Kali Yugas, we're worried about this one. We're here, now, we're preaching to people now, so they have to accept that in the one where Swayam Krishna comes, then Lord Chaitanya comes. Right? So at least then you can establish that, even if they can't figure out the other 999. But it doesn't matter because we're not there. Right? You know, give it another 4 million, 300,000 years, then we can, then you can discuss all you want, right? But, right? Oh, okay. Okay. Where was that?
Bottom of 18.
Oh, bottom 18. Okay. Okay, so then we'll start the last, that half of the sentence, on the bottom of 18 tomorrow.
Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Janitai Govardhana ki.